Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And the weather, I guess, at least for a couple days, warmed up, and now we went from winter to summer.
It's fun. It's springtime.
Right. Well, then tomorrow, we're recording this on Friday, or at least this part of it on Friday. Tomorrow is going to be like 51 and rainy.
Right.
So Saturday, welcome back to barbecues. Something. Yeah, welcome back to something a lot like winter.
Yeah.
And
I'll trade one for every 10 days of 65 to 75 and sunny, even if it is on a Saturday.
I mean, I guess if it means that I don't have to water my lawn, that's really important.
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, we need one per every 10 days.
Yeah, at least kind of make sure the lawn's growing. But on the baseball front, this is the time of year when I really spend all my life at one baseball field or another. Monday was umpiring, which I don't really recommend if you've taken allergy medication, going out and umpiring a baseball game.
I did hear that it's record levels of pollen this year, right?
It wasn't even because of that. It was a black fly bite. Oh. And that's the other thing. When you're umpiring a game, don't do it when one eye is almost swollen shut. Not a good idea.
You can't make that up.
No.
And wasn't something somebody was yelling at you from the sidelines?
No. And then, the next day, as luck would have it, the guy who I umpired for the first game, the next day our team is playing and he's the umpire in the field.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of one of those, all right, it's going to get paid back and it's going to get paid back quickly.
So that's a built-in excuse for you, though. Sorry, coach, I couldn't see that. I only have one eye today.
Well, and then that contributed to, okay, you're doping up on allergy meds and you lose your wallet.
And I'm drugged.
Yeah, it was just really a good, fun week.
But that was just Monday.
Yeah, that was just Monday. But then you get the rest of the week where you're reconstructing your wallet and trying to put credit cards and whatnot.
I see that you're carrying your passport today. So you haven't gotten to the license part of it.
No, I don't. I have not gotten to the DMV yet. Bedford police, please don't pull me over. I would greatly appreciate that. I'm driving a 1972 Volkswagen, so don't pull me over.
You won't be recognized in that.
No, not at all. The Tuesday was baseball. They had games back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday. They being Little League. Thursday, I'll even go back to Sunday. We were supposed to have a old man baseball game that rained out, but didn't rain out until we got to the stadium. So I was at the stadium, Holman, on Sunday. Monday, umpiring. Tuesday, Wednesday, baseball, Maggie's team. Thursday, went to see the general manager of the Nashua Silver Knights down at Holman, who he'd be a good guest for us to get on, and was hanging out down there with them for a little bit. The College Wood Bat team. And then tonight you and I are doing the Bedford versus Londonderry tilt at the SAU field at 6.
That's correct.
It's that time of year. And then tomorrow, assuming the weather holds, more baseball, followed by Mother's Day, which I think it's baseball free. We have no softball. There's no baseball that's been scheduled for me. But yeah, it's that time of year, like 7 days a week. I mean, there are certainly worse things.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, by the way.
Absolutely, yes. Including yours, who no doubt is listening to this program.
Yes, she represents from Maine. Deanna?
That might be the first time I ever, with all the games that she's come to over the years, and she's Hanson's good luck charm, like, she shows up, he scores 40. That is the first time I ever, she's just Mrs. Hanson to me.
Well, it's D-E-E-A-N-N-A. That's one word.
That doesn't require a lot of letters, though. That's good.
Sara is also worthy of a major shout out.
Yes, of course. And to my wife, too. For putting up with all the baseball in her life, really. But she knew what she was getting into. She's still frustrated about the fact that really any time she turns on a TV in the house, she has to get it off the MLB streaming
thing. That's the home base.
I know. That's no pun intended. Where everything is. Like, she can't watch anything in our room without turning baseball off first, that something is showing. So, but yes, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. And to go along with the baseball, we had the opportunity yesterday, so Thursday, to interview Grant Levine, who, if you, and we keep saying this, if you haven't had the opportunity to go out and watch a Bedford High game, you're kind of running out of opportunities. They'll get into playoffs at the end of the month. Not a whole lot of games left in the season. You took the drive out to Exeter earlier this week to catch 1-2.
I did. That was on Wednesday. We'll talk about that a little bit with Grant. But it was a really fun game. A lot of scouts in attendance. Jeff Mosso was on the mound, left-handed pitcher who's going to St. John's. And he did a great job of silencing the Exeter bats early in the game so that Bedford could get a lead. They built up a 6-0 lead. And then he, as he should with that kind of a lead, he made sure to throw strikes. Exeter got a couple of wind-aided home runs to make it 6-4. But then Bedford scored two more to put it out of reach, 8-4.
So it's an interesting preview, but the really difficult thing about the playoffs is you go up against one hot pitcher who's just dialed in that day and who stays out of trouble, and you're done. No matter, I hate to bring it up, but the girls basketball team 19-0 through the regular season with a win over Bishop Girton, and they had an opportunity to perfect season, lost in the final game for them, what would have been the second to last game in the regular season. That's really the challenge with the playoffs, is you have to have it all every day. It's not a double elimination setup. It's win and you keep playing, lose, and it's kind of what might have been.
Yeah, that is really tough, especially with baseball. And the nice thing about Bedford is I like the way that their lineup sets up. It's pretty balanced in terms of righties and lefties. And, you know, you start at the top in this game, it was Barrett and Anibal, righty-righty, then Grant Levine is lefty, then Ryan Lee, who we've seen hit a home run, is righty, then Murray, Mosso, Kyle, Avery Mosso in the 8-hole as a lefty, who we saw hit a home run against BG, and then Mokas, another lefty. So it's a nice balanced lineup where you've got guys from top to bottom who can really hurt you in different ways.
Yep.
You know, we saw Mokas hit 2 sacrifice flies, right, out of the 9-hole.
Right.
So that helps you in a one-and-done situation where you're not just relying on one or two batters. You're dangerous from 1 to 9. And then I also like how, you know, they went toe-to-toe with Exeter on Exeter's field and came away with a resounding victory, which gives them all the momentum heading into the playoffs if they do meet them for the state championship at Northeast Delta Dental Field.
Yes. The other thing that is, I guess, helps Bedford as far as that lineup is set up is think about all the games we've watched and think about how often Grant Levine comes to bat with nobody on base.
I don't even know if I've seen it.
I was going to say it never happens. It's infrequent that he leads off an inning.
Right.
They just, the top two in that Bedford lineup, Anibal and Joey Barrett, really do a great job of getting on base. And because they get on base, he's getting up and he's seeing pitches.
Right.
It's funny. I talked to the Little League kids about that stuff. Like, your job as a leadoff hitter, yeah, I want you on base. But if you're not on base, I want you to see pitches so that your teammate doesn't walk up having seen 2 pitches.
Right.
Because the pitcher still has a full armamentarium of things that he can throw. The thing that's really necessary for the leadoff guys, yeah, I want you on base by whatever means necessary. And those two at the top of the order both find a way to get on base, oftentimes at the same time.
Yeah, and I mean, if the first two batters in the top of the first or the bottom of the first go up to plate and see 4 or 5 pitches each, the odds of the pitcher just throwing 8 to 10 fastballs are very, very low. I mean,
Right. They're
going to try and get those guys out with an out pitch. So you're going to see the changeup, or you're going to see the breaking ball. You're going to see what type of breaking ball it is. And that really sets the table for your 3 and 4 hitter to come up and drive somebody in.
Right. So looking at stats that go along with it, because it's always nice to have stats to bear things out. Anibal's on-base percentage, .592. Joey Barrett, .479.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what you want setting the table. But, like, top to bottom in that Bedford lineup, you have a lot of guys who find a way to get on base. There are an eye-popping number of players who have OPSs in excess of 1. When I was a kid, I always wanted to come up with the new baseball statistic.
Okay.
I mean, because, like, you look at batting average. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Slugging percentage, on base, like, all that stuff's pretty straightforward. Like, okay, what else can you measure? And now we have all the things.
We do. And funny that that one is just adding two other ones together.
It's just adding two things together, and it's a relevant thing. And we have WHIP and WAR and win shares, and it's like you could blow your mind. You watch again, and now you look at the scoreboard, and there's a whole new column there: runs, hits, errors, MVR, mound visits remaining. Because
right.
Why not? Oh, but it that does help the speed of the major league game. That's for sure. So
yeah, we were charting that or following it at that Red Sox Royals game last week.
Yeah.
First time we'd seen it on the big board going down from 6 to 5. And then when it goes to extra innings, it starts increasing.
Yeah, you get one per inning per, yeah.
So in that game.
Per inch the pitcher is tall and, yeah, then divided by the circumference of the baseball squared.
What are we going to call that one?
I don't know. Something.
The Fox.
It needs a number.
The Kitsune.
It needs a number. So yeah, a lot of baseball talk. Grant Levine, who is, I didn't even look at what his stats are. I'm super curious to see what this looks like. Okay, he's on the bottom of the list. Batting average, .577. On-base percentage, .792. Slugging, .1423. Is that? Yeah.
So and, that puts his OPS over 2?
Yeah, 2.216. So, yeah, fun year. 4 hit by pitch, 21 runs scored. I mean, it's like video game baseball.
Well, that's how you start to build towards 12-0.
Yeah, that's how it happens. 6 runs, 20 runs batted in 12 games. So, and you and I get the opportunity to watch him tonight. People get to listen in on 105.1, and then people will get to listen to the interview with him, which is coming up next. And it's, for him, really just been kind of a crazy process, all of this.
Yeah, and it's really impressive how he has remained focused throughout and performed at such a high level. You know, you talk about those statistics that you just went through, but those are in the context of being the number 3 hitter,
yes,
on the number 1 ranked team with a lot of professional scouts watching you every game. It's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure, and the hardest thing, and we'll touch on it in the interview, is you can hit all you want in a cage, and you can hit all you want off a tee, but when it comes time to play a game, oftentimes you get, maybe in 4 at-bats, you'll see 1 pitch.
Right.
1 good, solid pitch. And you may get in an at-bat, like, 1 good, solid swing. And how do you not waste those? And that's, you deal with that with little league kids. I deal with it where they're old enough now that you can have conversations like that with them, and they're self-aware enough now. But it's, how do you translate the practice to a game? And if there was an easy way to do it, it'd be way easier to hit the ball than it is.
Yeah, the first person that comes to mind when we talk about that in the last 10, 20 years is Barry Bonds.
Oh, yeah.
And what he did in those historic seasons where he would get intentionally walk with the bases loaded. He would get maybe 1 pitch to hit every game, and he managed to hit, you know, 60, 70 home runs.
Yep.
Because he always took advantage of his 1 pitch.
Right.
And so we'll ask Grant about that.
Yeah, it's what Barry Bonds did, steroids, cream cleared, none of that, even if you assume that he was completely chock full of steroids, the numbers are still crazy.
Yeah, the fact that he still, you still, doesn't matter how strong you are, the fact is if you're only going to get 1 pitch out of 4 at-bats and you are focused enough and talented enough to put the bat to the ball and drive it for an extra base hit, seemingly every time.
Right.
You know, yes, the performance-enhancing substances may have helped him, may have been a factor, but it does not explain the entirety of his performance in those years.
Right. So we'll talk to Grant Levine a little bit about baseball and his approach, and there's some pretty good instructive stuff in there for young hitters as well, because don't forget, he's not too far removed from Little League. So right after this, we'll have Grant Levine. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen. And today we have a very special guest that Hanson and I have gotten to see play baseball a number of times. I may still lead in the total count, though, because, and I don't know if Grant knows this, because I mentioned it on air at one point. I remember umpiring games when he was 10 years old, which just makes me ancient at this point. But
it sure does.
We have Grant Levine with us, who is a Wake Forest commit. He is the first baseman, third baseman for the Bedford High baseball team, and is the subject of a lot of attention these days. So we're happy to have him with us. Grant, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. It's our pleasure. So yesterday, and we're recording this segment of the show on Thursday, was a big showdown, number one and number two. You and the rest of the crew traveled to Exeter and won 8-4. At this point in the season, how important is it to pick up a big win over a squad like Exeter?
Yeah, that was a really big win for our team. I mean, Exeter is a very talented team, and they got a lot of depth, 1-9. So, and Jeff did a really good job of keeping their bats pretty quiet most of the game. And then our hitters did a really good job of, you know, getting on base, working the count, trying to be aggressive against Mbembo, who's a very good pitcher.
Yeah, Grant, I was there and saw that in your second at-bat, you jumped on that fastball on the first pitch to hit a home run, and you made it 3-0. And then from that point forward, I noticed that with the 1-2 matchup, there was a lot of emotion on display. The two extra home runs that, you know, to Jeff's defense were probably wind-aided. Both extra players really were kind of celebrating on the base paths as they tried to get back into the game. But then you had an amazing play late in the game where you scored on a wild pitch from second, and you really got fired up after you scored. So do you tend to lead vocally and by emotion, or more, are you more of a leader by example?
I would say I'm kind of a both of those right now for this year. I mean, last year I was kind of just a leader by example, but my goal this year as a captain was to be more of a leader vocally and emotionally. So, I mean, I think I've done a pretty good job thus far this year with doing both of those.
It's funny. Hanson mentioned that the play, scoring from second on a wild pitch, and the first thing I think of, because I'm old, is the Dodgers back in 1988. And if you know the big home run that Kirk Gibson hit that won game one of the World Series, of course. But another big play in that season, oddly enough, was Gibson scoring from second base on a wild pitch. And he's somebody who's most certainly known as an emotional leader. But that really can have an impact on a team and fire everybody up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually remember right before that play happened, it was a pitching change. I think they had brought in a lefty, runners first and second, no outs. And they were going over and talking with my coaches, like, I think I might steal here. Just get the run on third base with no outs at the time. We'd hopefully just get maybe a ground ball to the right side, or have the hitter hit in the air to the outfield, and I could score on that just to give us an insurance run. But and the pitcher ended up throwing a wild pitch, and I was already at third by the time I went to the backstop, so I just turned around the base and went home.
It's a snap decision you have to make, and fortunately it turned out well. So we are with Bedford High School ball player Grant Levine, and you've been playing for a long time. A lot of people here in town may remember you playing games on ESPN in Little League Regionals back when. How does the pressure of playing in front of scouts compared to the pressure of playing in a nationally televised game when you're 12 years old?
To be honest, I think I was a lot more nervous playing on television for a game that could bring us to the Little League World Series. Just having, at that game, there was, 3,000 people. And I was just kind of nervous and excited because as a 12-year-old kid, your dream is to play in the Little League World Series. And realizing that I was just one win away, or our team was one win away from going, it was just crazy.
Yeah. And so, you mentioned the pressure now, different kind of pressure. One thing we've noticed is that you're really not getting that many pitches to hit, and you've done an excellent job taking advantage of the opportunities that you've gotten. And you know, the question is, how challenging is it for you mentally when you really don't know when you're going to get a pitch to hit, and you have to try and stay ready, even though it might only be one pitch in an entire game?
Yeah, I mean, as a hitter, you just have to be locked in on every pitch. You know, for me, I'm just trying not to let that fastball that happens to be somewhere in the middle of the play go by, or even miss it as in foul the back. I can't let that happen. I got to at least hit it hard and put it somewhere in play.
Makes sense. So when there are scouts in attendance, though, does your approach change, or are you looking pitch and location primarily?
I've always kept the same approach. I mean, for me, I always try to be aggressive early in the count, just trying to get a fastball. I mean, for me, it doesn't really matter where for a location. I just know that because I'm pretty good as a hitter hitting the ball to all parts of the field. I know I can hit to left field, center field, and right field with authority. So just getting a fastball early in the count is the key for me.
Yeah, we saw you go the opposite way down in Chelmsford and up the middle as well. And then we've seen you pull some home runs more recently. How about your approach against a left-handed pitcher? Do you change anything physically or mentally when you're facing a lefty as a left-handed hitter yourself?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I mean, when I'm facing a lefty, I'm trying to kind of, I call it inside-out swing. So, I mean, I'm just trying to focus on hitting it to the opposite field or staying middle. I don't want to try thinking pull because if I do that, I'm going to probably roll over on that pitch and hit the second base on a ground ball. So all I'm thinking is stay inside out, hit it to the opposite field.
I'm so going to make Maggie listen to this because we had that conversation yesterday about the pitch. It's fun. Obviously, you and your dad have come to practices that that Maggie's been at, and it's been a wonderful opportunity for her to hear what you have to say. But we had that conversation yesterday where I'm hammering the outside corner, and she's thinking, all right, good, I'm hitting a ball solidly to the left side, but if you let that ball get deeper in on you, there's so much that you can do going the other way.
Yeah, I mean, when you let the ball travel, you're going to get more power because you get more leverage when you let it travel more. So as a hitter, that's what you want to do, let the ball travel so you can maximize your power.
So speaking of younger players, and I know you've had the opportunity, you, your dad, your brother have joined us, and then your senior project was a fascinating one that I was kind of in the next cage over, keeping an eye on. Is there one hitting drill that you would recommend as the Grant Levine drill for younger players?
I like to call it the launch drill. So as a hitter, when your front foot comes down after you have like maybe a toe tap or maybe you have a leg kick, so after that foot comes down, you have your hands loaded back and you start in that position. And usually, I mean, I'll either put it on a tee or maybe my dad will give me some soft offs. And as the ball comes, you just like kind of swing as fast as you can because as a hitter, you're just trying to, with your bat, you want to be as quick as you can to the ball because as you get older and the competition gets better, it's just all about quickness with your bat.
Grant, that's one thing I've noticed and we've mentioned on air a couple times is I'm just so impressed with your physical approach at the plate because you seem so quiet physically. You don't have a lot of extra movement. You get your foot down early and you're loaded. And you mentioned the launch drill, which got me thinking, you know, because Major League Baseball now, they talk a lot about launch angle. Have you done anything with your swing in the last few years, you know, to change it, maybe try and get more power? Or is the swing you have now the swing you've had for a long time?
I mean, I think I've always been a line drive hitter. And, I mean, that's always been the key for me. I mean, as I get older, I'm going to hit the ball harder. And those line drives are just going to turn into longer home runs. But, I mean, I try not to get too caught up in the launch angle thing. I think that younger kids can get like caught up in that because, I mean, when you're 10, you might square a ball up, but if you hit that ball too high here, it's just a fly out. So, I mean, and then some of the other younger kids aren't strong enough where they can hit that ball high in the air because they might not be able to get it out of the infield. So I just think that through all ages through high school and little league that we should just preach on hitting line drives.
It's they used to always say, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case anymore, home runs are mistakes. And if you're just trying to hit the ball hard somewhere, home runs, of course, will happen. And for you, you're a student of the game. Your dad obviously is a student of the game. For your game overall, is there anything in particular that you're most focused on improving right now?
I would say probably defensively and working on my speed. I think I've been playing three positions so far this year. I've played first, third, and left. So, I mean, left is kind of a little bit new for me. I've only been playing it for a couple of years now. So I think learning how to get better reads on fly balls and working on my throws could be something I need to work on in the future.
Well, Grant, I saw you cut that ball off in the gap in left center yesterday where you got a great jump on it, so you could see you had the natural instincts. For the speed component of that, what can you do? Are you just, is it, you know, making sure you get in, you know, a bunch of extra 60s a few times a week, or is there anything specific for your speed that you're training?
My dad recently bought a weighted vest, so for the past couple of weeks, I've been just going in the street by my house, and I was run like five or six, probably about 60 yards, and just do like six or sprints like that, just running down the street, trying to get quicker.
Lauren and I are smiling because we love that.
Yeah, I love it, but I also think back to the days like in the late 90s when we were using those stupid jump shoes to try to get faster.
Right.
The ridiculous platforms on the front of them, and you know, that was the point in time. The late 90s was you're trying to muscle a ball out using nothing except your arms, and mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how good of a basketball player you are, how high can you jump? So yeah, that was back in the days back then. Now we're actually focused on the results instead of the vanity that goes along with it. So for you, in all the years that you've been playing, what is the top highlight for you? And it I guess it doesn't have to be anything that somebody would ordinarily think of. When was the moment that, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, you'll look back on and say, wow, that was amazing?
I would have to say it was the 2016 state championship, the first championship for our baseball program, our high school baseball program that we won. I mean, I'm all about winning, and that's what drives me. I just want to win at the end of the day, is because I just hate losing.
It's it most certainly. I don't know too many people who enjoy it, but just the feeling of when you walk out and you know that nobody's better than you. It's a wonderful feeling. Now, as for the remainder of the season, I think we've answered the question, but what are the goals for Grant Levine and the Bedford Bulldog baseball team?
I think it's definitely just to win a state championship. I think anything short of that, the season might just be a failure. I mean, our team is very talented, and, you know, we've had a lot of hard work during practices, and I think that this year we got what it takes to win the whole thing.
I would say that from the number of games that we've watched so far this season, I would tend to agree as well. And we have the opportunity. This doesn't help our listeners at all, but we'll be at the Londonderry Bedford game tomorrow, doing the game on radio as well. So, Grant Levine, we appreciate the time, and have a great afternoon. Enjoy class and a little bit of baseball practice.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Right on. Thank you,
Take
Grant.
Care.
Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I can't get this chair to be the right height.
A lot of challenges here that we're facing.
Seriously, that is a first world problem. And I also had another one that I experienced earlier today. Pellet stove guy was coming by my house to clean it. It was smooth sailing because I was deciding I was going to be a responsible homeowner and fix my pellet stove in May instead of in January. Well, one thing leads to another. This pellet stove, I've had it in the house for like a year. He tells me it is more disgusting and filthy than any that he has ever seen.
Whoa.
And he has to, I don't know what I did to it, and he has to take it home with him. So,
he wants to show it to his work colleagues?
No, he's going
to
like take pictures and put it on the pellet stove Instagram, and everybody's going to make fun of it, apparently.
Right.
Snapchat, draw little faces on it, but emoji. Yeah, so it went from, hey, it's going to be this cost, to it's going to be this cost times like three or four.
Oh, dude,
really? This? So, but now I have a big hole where the pellet stove was. The other thing that was pleasantly surprising out of it was I didn't realize how easy it is to carry a pellet stove out of the house, even with 40 pounds of pellets in it. So there's that. But yeah, so I don't need the pellet stove right now because the weather is warm, as we've discussed today, at least. Which means that it's time for outdoor sports.
That's right. And
like,
like college baseball too.
Well, college baseball, yes.
And golf.
I was thinking more golf. I mean, it is good golf weather, but it's not quite warm enough that you can go short sleeves. So you should really consider wearing something that covers up your arms.
Well, that's if
when you golf.
That's if you're in New Hampshire and it might be windy.
It could be anywhere.
If you're down in Florida with the Players Championship right now, all the best golfers in the world.
Yes,
it's in the 80s, so everybody's wearing short sleeves.
Yes,
you know, and in the featured group,
I mean, everybody, but some people are wearing tank tops. I'm sure, like on the sidelines.
Well, yeah, and the players would if they could. but the featured group of this Thursday, Friday, of course, Tiger, Phil, and Ricky Fowler. Three
yes.
of the, if not most popular, perhaps the most popular golfers in the world.
And Ricky Fowler, sartorial splendor cannot be overstated.
Or outdone.
Outdone.
He's at the top
Amazing.
Of the list.
Amazing.
I mean, he's the man for Puma. And he's, you know, he's usually wearing orange on Sunday. But on this particular week, he wore blue pants on Thursday that normally might be the talk of the day, but they were an asterisk. They were an afterthought. They were a footnote because Phil Mickelson came with something new this week.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by all this. I was really hoping that instead of long sleeves, I don't know, maybe somebody goes with dolphin shorts on the golf course or OP cords.
Like, well, that's
maybe that's the next thing
that's coming next.
Yeah,
if Phil has anything to do with it, because
yeah. members only jacket, maybe
green jacket.
I mean, it's in the 80s, so it could be a members only jacket.
He's basically wearing the green jacket this week
yes.
while he's playing.
Well, but the thing is, and who knows how much he's getting paid for it, but I'd never heard of, and I don't wear shirts with buttons if I can help it.
Seriously, this is like your nightmare.
Yeah. But that shirt has too many buttons. But I at least now know the name of the shirt manufacturer is Mizzen & Main.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Right. So
I'm going to Google it, and then maybe I'll go to their website, and then maybe I'll buy, in Phil's case, I'm guessing he's like a 17, 17 and a half, 35. I think he could stand to have a little roomier of a cut.
Yeah. Well,
that
it's
didn't
tailored.
Look comfortable.
No, it's tailored.
Well,
it's a button-down shirt that you might see at work. From some sort of executive, buttoned down all the way down the front. And again, he's playing the 80-degree weather, so this is Lauren's actual greatest nightmare
ever.
Yes. And
this is the point at which, like, if I was golfing wearing that, I would go full Hulk.
And just open the top.
I just tear open the shirt, and the buttons just start flying everywhere, and somebody files for workman's comp because they get hit in the eye with buttons.
Well, Phil probably wanted to do that. In the first round, he shot 79.
Oh, yeah. And wearing
that shirt, he's seven over. He's going to miss the cut, and really a letdown because this was billed as the great thing that everybody's going to tune in to see Tiger and Phil actually paired together in the first two rounds. Something that never ever happened.
Right. And well, the other thing, and this is more as marketing guy and less of broadcasting guy. I googled Phil Mickelson shirt. The first thing that comes up above top stories. Is a Google search ad for Mizzen & Main. So this company actually, somebody went to the length, and they're not dumb, this is a smart move, to buy the keywords Phil Mickelson shirt.
That's how that's
Mizzen
done.
For Mizzen & Main. Boom.
If you have Brilliant. More, if you have more questions about that,
yeah.
Lauren Fox is your guy.
If you're having trouble sleeping and you want to just pass out in the middle of the day, I'm more than happy to talk to you about the mechanics of Google marketing.
Okay.
Anyway, continue. No, I don't want you falling asleep now. I can't carry the show.
Well, that brings us to, again, we're taping this on Friday, so day two. What happened
yep.
after Phil shot 79?
Oy.
Well, the current update is he's 1-under through 16, 6-over overall. Cut projected at -1. So
phone just made the ESPN sound. I think the speakers caught it.
Well, that has something to do with the Patriots coaching staff. They've had some news related to Detroit that's not as positive.
I was
going to
say,
is
Matt Patricia coming back?
No. So let's focus on golf.
Okay, yes,
and
golf.
Phil's 79.
Focus. Lauren, focus.
So he's going to miss the cut. We have a contributor to the show. He doesn't even know it, but it's my old teammate, John Watterson from Keene, New Hampshire. He's our local go-to for insider New Hampshire knowledge and all things sports, humor, statistics, etc. He gave me the update on Ricky Fowler, who started off pretty well today, but he just had back-to-back double bogeys on his back nine. He's now +1, so he's probably going to miss the cut. Tiger, meanwhile, is right on the cut line at minus one. So these three amazing golfers, you know, just it hasn't clicked. You know, they haven't had group chemistry this tournament. It looks like only Tiger's going to make the cut out of those three.
Interesting. Well, it's they've all been there, done that. It just is a matter of who can put it together at the right time. And it goes back to the same thing we talked about in baseball. Like, you only get so many swings. And if you don't find a way to kind of harness it, you only get so many shots in basketball. You got to harness them, take advantage of what you have. If you can't, you're not making the cut.
Right. And, you know, to Phil's defense, a lot of his shots this week were just a hair off. And this is one of those courses where if you're a yard or two off on certain spots, it might cost you two or three strokes. So, you know, he might even say that he wasn't that far off. But still, surprising nonetheless for him to shoot 79.
Right.
You know, Phil's not in the business of missing cuts.
No, not at all. And I mean, you've played in long sleeve shirts. I have too, but usually it's a long sleeve T-shirt that you're wearing underneath a golf shirt or a polo shirt or whatever you want to call it,
or a golf shirt with maybe a zipper that's only halfway down.
Yeah,
the shirt.
But yeah, I mean, we used to go out all the time when I was working real jobs, and hey, dude, you want to go out and play Twilight and we need to be at wherever and I don't have time to go home and get my clothes, but we're going to go play Super Twilight at 5:30 and play as many holes as we can until it's dark out. Fine. I'm just going to wear that was back in the days when my golf clubs would just be in the car.
Right.
All the time.
Well, that's the best place to have them.
Oh, yes.
It's like leaving the channel on baseball.
All the time.
You know, just so you're ready.
I don't have room for golf stuff in my car. I have baseball bags and baseball balls and, first aid kits and
illegal baseball contraband bats.
Baseball, Easton ghosts that have been. No, I don't have any of those.
I did hear some commentary about Phil's shirt, though, that, you know, from the golf commentators, they've interviewed him and they've got little snippets of information. Apparently, it breathes pretty well and it's more comfortable than it looks.
Yep.
But let's just see how often he actually wears it the rest of the summer.
Who knows? I mean, it depends how much he's getting paid to wear it.
Yeah.
Like, this is a marketing cost, and think about how many people, good, bad, or indifferent, like, you don't buy a dress shirt to play golf in it. You buy a dress shirt because it's comfortable. Well, if that's the message that they're trying to get across, then you're good.
He's going to need to play well quickly in that, because you win a PGA tournament, you're going to probably make over $1 million.
Yes.
I don't think he's getting paid $1 million per tournament to wear that.
But how many tournaments would he have won?
Well, he's not going to make anything for missing the cut.
Absolutely, yes.
So,
yeah, he's still getting his marketing cash. So,
speaking of breaking news, we're taping this on Friday. The other breaking news for an indoor sport was that the head coach of the number one team in the Eastern Conference in the NBA this year, Dwayne Casey, has been summarily fired after the sweep at the hands of LeBron and the rest of the Cavaliers.
I don't get it. He won 59 games.
But in the series when it all mattered, in the Eastern Conference semis, he won zero.
Yes. I don't know. I struggle with that. Not to mention, Dwayne Casey and Toronto were just a really good fit.
Yeah, he's been there 7 years.
He's been there for a while. If memory serves, his wife is from up there. He is a community guy. He's tied into the fabric of the community pretty well. That Toronto team is a good team, but by no means was it a complete team. And you and I talked about it a few weeks ago. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago when Kobe Altman basically got rid of everybody on the Cavs. And it's hilarious. I was watching SportsCenter the other day, and they said, well, you know, the Cavs are, I think they're 0-2, 1-2 against the Celtics this year. But look at the lineups. And the lineup the first game featured Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose and LeBron. And the lineup the second game, I don't remember who was in that. And the lineup in the third was right after the trades. And Chetty Osman was starting for Cleveland at that point. So you look at that. But we talked about it right after that trade and said, these are some interesting accompanying pieces for LeBron. Just how quickly can they gel? And the answer has been pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a little deceptive, that the fact that the Cavaliers were the number four seed,
right,
and they didn't have a good record during the regular season, and people think, well, you know, Toronto really should beat them and will, and a lot of people came out and predicted that, but the Cavaliers are really hitting their stride, and they have a lot of talent. I mean, just because they got rid of those Hall of Fame-type names and brought in a bunch of folks who don't have as much playoff experience, they're very talented. I mean, Rodney Hood didn't even get in that game, you know, until Coach Lou calls on him in the final 7 minutes of game four, the clinching game. He decides not to go into the game, which is a whole nother story. But if you've got a guy like Rodney Hood, who's scoring 18 to 20 a game when he was on Utah, and he doesn't even play, that shows you something about Cleveland's depth. I mean, right. This is not a pushover. This is not a normal four seed. They just hadn't gelled, hadn't had enough time to play together, hadn't tried hard enough during the regular season to be where they should have been, which is probably at least a top two, you know, maybe top three seed.
Right. It takes a lot of time to get to that point. You knew that they weren't going to be a one or a two just based on the Celtics had a hot start and the Raptors were consistent throughout, but I don't think it's a fair characterization to say that Dwayne Casey underperformed in that instance, because if you, he kind of ran up against the wrong guys.
He did. And, you know, anybody could get swept probably, although, you know, Indiana took him to seven. So I think that's part of the,
yeah, maybe so.
You know, part of the context of what Masai Ujiri is looking at. And bottom line, it's more of a bottom line decision, I think. You know, they got swept by the Cavs last year in the playoffs, they get swept this year. And it's just, okay, I don't want excuses. I just need to get a coach in here who's going to do something different. You know, he had his chance and couldn't get past LeBron. I mean, nobody else has in the last 7 years in the Eastern Conference. So it's not, you know, it's not like he did a terrible job. His peers just voted him coach of the year. But, you know, that brings us to the next topic, which is that...
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, yes.
Brad Stevens doesn't get any votes for coach of the year from his peers. Are you kidding me? That's embarrassing to that fraternity. 538 came out with a really interesting article where they started to get into some of the numbers with Brad Stevens and the Celtics, and they used a statistic called projected box plus minus.
Okay.
Which you can describe generally as what each player should contribute during the course of a season based on their last 3 years of performance.
Yes.
And using that statistic, the projection for Boston's win total this year was 38 wins. They ended up with 55 wins. So that says a lot right there. Nobody expected the Celtics to come in second in the East after losing Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. But they did so, you know, with a flourish. And then they started talking about, in this 538 piece, the one of the areas that Brad Stevens gets a lot of credit for is the plays that he draws up during a timeout.
Right.
And the numbers really bear that out. If you look at the average for what Boston does over the course of 100 possessions on offense and on defense when you're coming out of a timeout, if you take 100 possessions, the average is that after those 100 possessions, Boston is going to be ahead by 33 points. So they were fourth in the NBA in that statistic. If you go down to like eighth or ninth in the standings in that stat, the teams are like plus 16. So you can see how far, it's almost like stratospheric, the difference that Brad Stevens and the Celtics have against other teams and coaches when they have their biggest impact on the game. You know, you have a timeout, you call a play, they go play it. It's a great way to track the impact of a coach. And of course, what Brad Stevens did in that series against Philadelphia, where he called that play where they got Embiid out of the paint with
right.
a pick, and then they have Al Horford isolated on the post, and they toss it into him directly, and he gets a layup for the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that shows right there, that's not just about some quirky statistic. That's translating into a win in the playoffs. And now Boston is in the Eastern Conference Finals, and Toronto is home for the summer.
Well, and that translates into Horford being covered by Robert Covington, which is just a bizarre matchup at that point. It's, there's a no doubt who's going to win in that situation. I will say I enjoy Al Horford. Great player, smart player. These guys, and we've talked about it before, these guys all fit into a mold where they seem to be team first guys. They seem to be very good at executing. And who knows, maybe, yeah, he is. There are two pieces to it. There's what he does with X's and O's within the framework of a game to get his guys to be able to score. But then there's also drafting a guy who's a fit and getting a guy who's going to be the right fit within the system, who doesn't whine and cry like Scottie Pippen did when Tony Kukoc got the opportunity for a game-winning shot. It's a bunch of guys. Yeah, you know, do you think that Jason Tatum would have wanted to take the game-winning shot? Sure. Do you think Jason Tatum really cares who takes the game-winning shot if they're going to the next round? No.
You're so right. It's a complete teamwork between the front office, Danny Ainge, and the rest of the staff, and Brad Stevens. They have to work in concert to pick the right players, develop them, and then coach them and execute. So it's Brad Stevens is not by himself here, but that's a great example what you've gone into about getting the last shot. Brad Stevens doesn't care who it is. He's just going to look at the matchup on that day and make the right move for that matchup. I mean, I've seen him draw up plays for Marcus Morris to get the game winner.
Yeah.
You know, Tatum has taken some shots at the end, and in this particular occasion, it was Horford's turn. And you're right. When Covington was on him, he had no chance.
Right. And I guess the other one that's conspicuous by their absence, and I don't think gets the credit that he should as far as head coaches go, is Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it's easy to win when you have an abundance of riches. However, things can really go off the rails fast. I remember there was a Lakers team years ago that everybody thought was going to be the second coming. I think it was Kobe and Shaq. And all the guys were signing to get their rings.
Gary Payton,
Mitch Richmond, Karl Malone. That team didn't do it. And it was kind of the wrong chemistry with all of that sort of stuff. And they were looking at it like this. Rodman was on that team. Like, this is a foregone conclusion that we're going to get there. And it's not easy to do it. So I do think there is I love Steve Kerr's interviews. Brilliant guy, very humble guy, and he is, for me, he is the perfect coach for that team, and he is the perfect coach for that part of the country.
He really is, and the proof is in the pudding with him. I mean, Mark Jackson had those guys. He did get to the finals.
Right.
He didn't win any rings.
Yeah.
And Kerr got the first ring without Durant. So
right.
Mark Jackson can't say, well, he's got Kevin Durant right now. Let's not forget about Steve Kerr and the Warriors winning a championship before they got Durant. He is perfect for that market and doesn't get enough credit. He's great for chemistry. But one more point on Brad Stevens before we hit our break. And, you know, we talk about Danny Ainge.
Who says we're taking a break?
Oh, well, I thought,
no, we're
I thought
not.
We
might. We're keep going.
Oh, we're not fatigued?
We're keeping going.
Oh, we're just
going
to power through.
This is like in Seinfeld when they were almost out of gas and they're just like, Kramer's just driving. That's what we're doing.
Okay, good.
Okay, right. Yes.
So then just continuing on this discussion, one of the favorite quotes that came out of this week, when Danny Ainge is asked about, well, what do you think about Brad Stevens not getting any votes for Coach of the Year from his peers? And Danny said, well, he's our Coach of the Year.
Right.
Mic drop.
Yeah, it's who cares?
Yeah,
we know how good he is. But it's
why we signed him to a 6-year deal with no NBA experience.
I mean, it's just Stevens. He seemed different when he was in college. He seemed like he was going to be one of those guys who was just going to fit in the pros, and he just fits. He's just that kind of guy. And yeah, you took him basically right out of Butler, which. Don't forget, Butler was about, what, an inch from upsetting Duke in the national championship game with Gordon Hayward, of course. So you look at that, and this is a guy that just doesn't get fazed. Like, he's just he's a sharp dude. He's going to be there for a long time, because why would he go anywhere?
Exactly.
As I say that, somebody will Krzyzewski will leave and Brad Stevens will be the next coach at Duke.
I mean, that's the only reason. That'd be the only way he's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Celtics aren't going to let go of him.
No.
All these people talking in the media about, well, what would happen if he became available and, you know, who would be the first pick, Popovich or Stevens? I mean, he's not going to become available. And he would be the first pick for me if there was a new franchise and all the coaches were available.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And so getting back to one more thing, you mentioned Marcus Morris, who's a Kansas Jayhawk. And can't forget today, Nick Collison, actually yesterday, Nick Collison, who was a Jayhawk and played in the NBA for 15 years, just retired.
Yes, he did. What a run.
The number one pick in that draft
was?
Do you know who it was?
Well, what year was it?
2003.
That was LeBron's year, right?
That was LeBron's year. So the interesting point that was made earlier today was look at guys in that draft who are on decline or retiring.
Wade,
Carmelo Anthony. Yeah, there are a bunch of guys that are all kind of in the real twilight of their careers. And then you have LeBron, who is continuing to improve. And granted, he didn't spend any time in college, so he came in younger than they did, but still. But Collison, 15 years as a supersonic.
That's right.
Yeah.
All of his career with one franchise.
Yep.
Just had two different names.
Yes. And the OKC Thunder got to the finals with the Thunder, with the Big Three before they were the Big Three when they were all just in diapers. They weren't even 24 yet. Westbrook, Durant, and Harden, which is just utterly confounding to think of. And Collison, in his 15-year career, the last few years didn't make a whole lot of money, about $3-4 million a year. Didn't make a whole lot of money by NBA standards. I mean, I would probably give some of my major organs to make that in a year. But Collison didn't make, by NBA standards, a whole lot of money, $58 million in his career. Didn't ever average more than 10 points in a game. But was a very good glue guy who just kind of said, you know what? I'm out. It's time for me to go home.
Yeah, what a great run. Great story. You don't see it very much anymore where a guy spends 15 years with the same franchise. And he was a great glue guy. I mean, throughout his career, there were lots of times when he got a lot of minutes. But he never complained. He did what the team needed. And I read something in the last couple of years about how he'd gotten to the point now where he just loved practice.
Not a game.
Practice. He still loved scrimmaging.
Practicing. Explain to me how me practicing makes my teammates better.
Well, go inside the ropes with Nick Collison for 15 years, and you'll have an insight into that.
Yeah,
you know, that's sort of an attitude.
Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes. We've used that before.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who he was, and he was content with it. He was happy with it, and that does so much for team chemistry when you've got a guy like that who he knows that he can go perform and do well if he's given the minutes. And to his credit, whenever he did, he'd go out there and, you know, he may shoot 2 for 3 and get, you know, 4 points and 3 rebounds in 6 minutes. If that's what they wanted, he'd do it. If he didn't play for a few games, he would just work hard in practice and try and make his teammates better.
And there's a lot to be said for guy like that. It's like an organizational guy. And just like I'm sure he was giving them a hometown discount, they were giving him the kind of the evil you know is better than the evil that you don't know. And for him to come out as he did, are there any, this might be a question for another day, are there any Sonics still? Oh, Durant. Anybody else?
Well, since Durant was drafted by the Sonics, and he's in, what, like his 9th year or so?
Yep.
We know that he's in that group. Westbrook was drafted by OKC. Would there have been any other Sonics?
There are no Sonics in 2007 who are still kicking around. Wally Szczerbiak.
He's gone. He's broadcasting.
Earl Watson is gone. Delonte West, also gone.
Long gone.
It's just funny to look at
Earl Watson has been coaching.
Earl Watson.
All these guys.
My God. I don't know in all of his time. Danny Fortson was a former Sonic. Just so much. I don't know. I don't know that I ever saw Earl Watson make a shot.
I know.
Ever.
Yeah, so I guess Collison and Durant are the last of the dying breed of the Supersonics.
They are it. I mean, Ray Allen's gone. Just some of these names, though. It's like, I remember that guy, Robert Swift.
By the time Durant retires, maybe there'll be a team back in Seattle.
So you would hope. It'll come full circle. It's a good market for it. I'm going to go back to the 2004-2005, and really there's nobody. I can't even say this guy's name. Ibo Kutluwe?
Don't remember that name.
What? I stumped Hanson. He played 5 games in the NBA. Oh. Did not score a point. He's like the Moonlight Graham of the NBA.
Yes, he is.
Did you know, by the way, we brought up something, you and I, when we were texting back and forth about cliches.
Yes, we did.
And we're going to talk about it next week because there's a lovely segment in Bull Durham where they talk about interview cliches. Did you know, and I didn't know this until I looked it up because I have the attention span of a mosquito or a gnat, is there was a real Crash Davis.
Okay.
That is where Ron Shelton, who wrote the movie, came up with the character. He named Crash Davis after the original Crash Davis.
Yeah, the guy who hit all those home runs and all those minor league seasons.
Right. No, yeah. There was an original old guy who wasn't that. Like, he was an infielder with the Philadelphia Athletics who then played in North Carolina, South Carolina is like a hotbed for minor league baseball, and even more so back in the past when every town had its own minor league baseball team. But Crash Davis was playing, Ron Shelton had heard the name, and then when they were asking permission to use the name Crash Davis, they brought him to the set, and he met Kevin Costner and all that, but was really what got him to allow them to use the name was Susan Sarandon flirting with him.
They brought in the closer.
That was the other thing. They couldn't figure out when they were making that movie, they had other women that they wanted to cast. And they said that Susan Sarandon was too old to play the role of Annie Savoy. So
not true.
No, she was perfect for it. So they said, studio executives have really lousy imaginations. So do us a favor. Put on something that'll be flattering. She wore a dress that was like off the shoulders and showed off the assets that she most wanted to show off to the studio executive for about half an hour, and she got the role.
I was going to say, if it was up in the air and then she was the one who closed the deal on Crash Davis,
yeah,
then that should have earned her the role right there.
She was the closer for everything. And then Tim Robbins and her were the thing that came out of that movie.
In real life.
In real life, Crash Davis gets the girl in the movie, as it should have been. I mean, there really is no other appropriate ending. And as I was watching a couple of those scenes, I'd kept thinking, yeah, it'd be a great movie to watch with Maggie because there is so much good baseball content. But the adult content in that movie, the amount of explaining that I would have to do, yeah, that's kind of the biggest challenge. So, I don't know. But our thanks. You have anything else you want to add before we...
No, I guess we'll do our other baseball segment next week.
Yeah, we'll do the other baseball stuff next week. We're at the 30-minute mark of this last segment, and Kramer's still got his foot on the gas pedal. But just wanted to quickly thank our guest, Grant Levine, and wish him well the remainder of the season, as well as whatever path he goes, whether Wake Forest or whether to Major League Baseball or the minor leagues. Our best of luck to Grant, and then also to everybody here at the station who always treats us so well. Chris Gentry, Bill Jennings, Harry Kozlowski, and Colleen Richardson. So thanks to everybody. Thanks to you for listening. We will catch you next week. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.